Hello and welcome to the S-Words Podcast, a roundtable discussion about pop culture subjects beginning with the letter S. I'm Kevin Chu.
I'm a fish.
That's Dominic Nguyen.
I'm Andy Scheffler.
I am Sung.
Sung Lee. All right, so this is a topic that we had planned to save for a while until someone told me that Ponyo comes out this week and not months later, or I just put it in some arbitrary spot. Anyway, we moved it over here and moved the G.I. Joe topic of Snake Eyes and Storm Shadow somewhere off in the distance, far away from when the movie is still in theaters. So, this week's topic is Studio Ghibli. So
Ghibli.
Ghibli. We were talking about this earlier. How do you really pronounce it? It is Ghibli?
Ghibli. So it's Ghibli.
Ghibli. All right. So let's go with the usual topic we like to ask each other on the show. What was your first Ghibli film?
My first Ghibli film technically wasn't Ghibli. They hadn't been formed at that time, but it was Miyazaki directed. It was Lupin the Third, The Castle of Cagliostro. And if any of you have ever seen Lupin the Third, you know that, you know, actually the modern Lupin the Third was defined by castle. If you look at the old 70s TV show, Lupin the Third was much like old James Bond in that he would kill people for really no good reason. And then after Miyazaki got his hands on the character, he turned into a much more like lighthearted and fun vision of like the master thief and his merry band of friends, as opposed to the morally ambiguous mastermind and his crew. And so yeah, Castle of Cagliostro still has a fond place in my heart.
So the first one for me is actually Castle in the Sky, or Laputa. But my first experience with it wasn't actually watching it. It was the art book. When I was in high school and I was taking Japanese, my Japanese teacher had the art of Laputa on the shelf with all of the other books. And, you know, after class or, you know, while we were bored, I was flipping through it and looking like, this movie looks so awesome. And I'm like trying to piece together what the story is just from all the pictures. Like,
good luck with that.
I didn't get very far, but it's like, I have to see this movie. And so then when I went to college and I joined Cal Animage, at one point I saw that they had it in the library. And so I had to borrow it and watch it. And that was the first one I saw.
Not the worst one to start with. Yeah. By the way, say it right. It's Laputa. It means the whore.
Yeah, for all you.
That's why they had to rename it for the U.S. release.
Yeah, for all you Spanish speakers, if you're offended by that, we're sorry. It's not our fault.
It's really? Do you remember Gulliver's Travels? The floating city of Laputa, which means the whore, and that's why he named it Laputa. It means the whore in Spanish. You didn't know this at all, did you?
I don't think Kevin's buying it from the look on his face.
Look it up on an online Spanish dictionary. Yes,
No. When you were like, remember Gulliver's Travels? I was trying to be like.
Oh.
Yeah, of course I do. Of course.
I've read
that.
Oh, come on. It's so awesome. Anyway.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
I was always wondering why this is called Castle of the Sky. I thought it was because people would not know how to pronounce Laputa.
Because
or they'd be like, poo.
No, it's because it means the whore, the prostitute, the woman of negotiable virtue. Would you like me to go on?
No, I'm good.
Okay. Anyway, Sung.
What about you, Sung?
I want to say, I guess like the only person I could really ask who may have the answer is Andy here, which is, did they show Nausicaa on television like a long time ago?
What is it?
Warriors of the Wind. It was a very heavily bastardized version.
Yes.
Where it was the main character for whom it's named, the original show is named Nausicaa, was actually made to a minor character, and it focused more on what's his name, the prince.
I don't remember the prince's name, but yeah. That was my first exposure to anything Miyazaki. It was on television somewhat often, somewhat regularly. But then, like, after that, I mean, it was probably 94, 95-ish when my oldest brother went to college and he joined a little club called Cal Animage Gamma, which is from UC Santa Barbara. So he started bringing anime tapes home. And so he brought a lot of tapes. I can't really pin down exactly which one I saw first. I saw a lot of them, like within a short amount of time. I think it was either Laputa or Nausicaa. I think
either one is fine.
Okay. Kevin?
Okay. So For me, anime was something I didn't get into until much later in high school. And when I did start finally getting into it, one of the first films I saw was Princess Mononoke. And I didn't like it.
Still to today,
I'm still not a big fan of it. And I don't know why. The animation's great. There actually is a story going on there. There are themes and also, there's a whole bunch of a world totally created in that film, but I'm just not a big fan, and it might be because the first time I ever saw it was in the dub. And even then, if I go back to the Japanese track, I'm still like, eh, it's okay. But then again, I've also felt this way about a lot of Ghibli films. We're going to go into this about later.
Ghibli,
sorry.
It's okay. It's very hard to figure out because they have a GH, and that's under no language a J sound. Maybe it's a sound or a... Anyway.
Ghibli. Anyways, yeah, so that was my first one. We'll go into the other ones we've seen before. But really, what defines a Ghibli? What defines a Ghibli film, then? Besides the fact that in a lot of the Miyazaki ones, they all look the same.
And they all have the strong female heroine. It involves flight and
stop all the pollutant.
Yes, and a very anti-industrialization message.
What defines it is the directors. There are basically two directors who run all of Ghibli's important work. I'm saying important because there's a third director who did Tales of Earthsea.
There's actually...
A third? There's another one, too?
There's more than that.
There's two more, yes.
I'm just talking about the major ones. I think it's Takahata and Miyazaki.
I'm cheating. I've got the Wikipedia page open right now. But there's another one who did Umeka Kikueru and Mimi o Sumasaba.
Okay. All
right. I'm sorry. Ocean Waves and Whisper of the Heart, respectively. For those,
Whisper of the Heart is not Miyazaki?
No.
Huh. For some reason, I always thought it was.
But anyway, yeah. So what defines it is the vision of those two directors, and more Miyazaki than Takahata, really. But Takahata, you know, is important to them too.
No, and The Cat Returns.
It's also about, you know, like childhood and youth, like innocence of youth and all that other stuff.
And also really, really anally detailed animation.
And backgrounds.
I don't think they would have ever expected someone to call their animation
anally detailed.
But thank you, Dom. Okay, so let's just go skip this boring stuff. Ghibli's popularity in Japan going up, going down, still stagnant.
So this is the funny thing: is that
the films
every time
don't seem to be getting better.
Every time Ghibli releases a movie, it's number one in Japan for 4 to 5 weeks. The real thing is that. In recent years, what Eric and I have noticed is that the reviews for Ghibli have gotten much more mixed over the years. It used to be that Miyazaki would get a free pass. It would be sort of like, I guess, Spielberg, after a while, would get a free pass. Did Scorsese ever have a free pass?
Scorsese's had...
Not really.
No, but he's actually had great films.
Yeah. Well, so has Miyazaki. But anyway, the point is that they were giving him a free pass for a while. And recently they've gone, like, on various review sites, and they've gone, yeah, this movie is okay, it's pretty, and that's about when you know, okay, they don't like it, and they're being very polite. And so, you know, they've sort of, there's a sort of feeling that they've lost it in recent years.
Yeah, I definitely feel like that. I'm just wondering, because they still generate huge box office in Japan.
Well, for Japanese numbers, remember that Japan is about the population of, you know, a couple states.
Well, I understand that, but still, they still do well. They don't.
Yes.
No one says they bomb in Japan.
Yes, but they do bomb in America.
Well, that's because they do market it more as niche rather than mainstream over here.
Which is unfortunate.
They put it mostly in limited release theaters nowadays. I remember they had that big... thing they were trying to push Spirited Away. I think they did an 800 theater run for that. That was a pretty big deal back then.
And then it didn't really make anything.
Yeah. When that was in the theaters, I went and I took my mom at the Block in Orange County, and it was a Saturday, like, I guess afternoon or evening, and we were like the only people in the theater.
Wow.
Yeah, for Howl's Moving Castle, we went to a theater in Berkeley, and there was like the two of us. And then maybe 5 or 6 more people in there.
Well, even for Berkeley? Wow.
But students don't have disposable income.
Oh, yeah, they'd probably just be like, I downloaded it, guys. Let's
I remember for Princess Mononoke, they were showing it at a special theater. They had a special showing in a theater, like somewhere in SF. and a bunch of us drove out to see that. It wasn't Miyazaki, but someone else who was a part of Studio Ghibli represented. And the lady who was the moderator, I guess you could say, she, you know, like you could tell that she had no idea what she was talking about, because she announced the movie as Princess Mononoke.
No, that was the Spirited Away showing, and then she called...
Wait, what did I say?
You said Princess Mononoke. You said it was a special screening of Princess Mononoke. It was for Spirited Away. I was there with you through that one. And she said, from Hayao Miyazaki, the esteemed director of Princess Mononoke, and people were like, oh. And I thought, holy crap, you would have figured she would have... You know, prepared this.
Yeah, I could have sworn that was Princess Mononoke. I guess
it was
Spirited Away.
San Francisco International Film Festival, yeah. Right? When we went to Castro Theater.
I was wrong then.
That's a great theater, though.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Dang, you took my story.
But yeah, I mean, I went to, when I was in Japan last year, Ponyo had recently been released in theaters. And, you know, there was the usual marketing blitz for it. I mean, the song was playing everywhere. They were doing it in concert. They were playing it on morning news. They were playing it during the variety shows, and, you know, Ponyo was everywhere, and people were like, yeah, I took my kids to see it. It was pretty good for the kids. I didn't like it as much as Totoro.
So let me tell you about this, because the distribution in the United States has kind of dipped. The furthest they ever got was with Spirited Away, and they were riding on this whole high about that it was going to be that whole animated feature, the winner of the animated feature for the Oscar Awards. And now it doesn't feel like it's a big deal. It's still a limited release kind of thing.
It's that whole thing where, you know, how Quentin Tarantino brings foreign movies over to the U.S.
Exactly. But
things like that. And, you know, the reason that it gets even any attention is because it says Quentin Tarantino presents, or in this case, John Lasseter presents, you know, or Disney presents, but it's really John Lasseter.
Yeah.
It's really John Lasseter pushing all of this. Like, John Lasseter says, watch this movie.
I have a question for you, though. Do you think that the Ghibli films could ever really do very well mainstream over here if they had perfect marketing, even?
Some of them could. You know, a lot of them are not really built along the make kajillions of dollars formula that American studios have for, you know, their Shrek movies or their whatever. But a lot of the movies are really good. I mean, I don't think you'd ever see, you know, Grave of the Fireflies being the feel-good hit, movie of the summer or anything like that.
Yeah, no.
But, you know, Castle of Cagliostro, let's see, what else would do pretty well? I mean, probably not Kiki's Delivery Service, because they tried that.
Really? Because I feel like the films are too calm for the United States. I think it's...
Yeah, they are.
That's why Cagliostro is pretty much the only
one. Dude.
And it's the same thing with a lot of Japanese cinema that... A lot of films from Japan are, and I try to take this from Ozu, who's a very well-established director in Japan, that they're about being patient as well.
Yeah, and it's about the art, which is...
It's about the fact that you can bring a beer into the theater.
Yeah. also, like, I think another turnoff to American audiences is just the art style itself. It is, like, if I watched the trailer for Ponyo, and the first thing I thought is just like, it just looks very messy. Like, cause I get they're underwater and things are moving around, but there aren't really the solid lines. They're not really solid, vibrant colors.
Yeah, there are pretty bright, vibrant colors.
Yeah,
but...
I mean, not to the degree of like the Disney movies.
That's true. It's a different color palette.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I think they could do well, but not very many of them would do well. It's much more for the kind of people who get Criterions, or people who can watch The Seven Samurai the entire way through without falling asleep. It's a little more for an artsy crowd, I guess, is what you could say. I mean, American children are much too fast-paced, I guess. And by fast-paced, I mean short attention span.
Good old ADD.
Let's talk about this, though. Hayao Miyazaki has said several times he's going to retire. I think this is the third time he's come out of retirement. Am I right here? He retired for Mononoke Hime.
Yes. He came back for Spirited Away, and he came back to help with Earthsea.
Because it was his son. He's like, son, you're not doing a good job here. Help. Well, that's what people said in theory, at least. He's like, here, let me help.
And then he came back again for Ponyo. Or did he not retire after
I don't think he retired after helping with Earthsea.
Okay, so he's been back and forth about things. What are your ideas? Do you think he should have stopped when he was ahead there?
You know, there are some people who earn the right to come back as many times as they can, as long as they think they can keep doing it.
Is George Lucas one of those people?
No, Michael. I was thinking Michael Jordan. You know, Michael Jordan came back from retirement and said, "Hey, look, three more championships," and then he retired again. The second time he came back from retirement, not so good, but still, he had earned the right to unretire. You know, it's like, all right, you still got it. Let's see if you can keep doing it. And, you know, Miyazaki earned that right. And, you know, he hasn't necessarily done a great job with his comeback or anything like that, but he at least earned the right to try and prove it. And so I don't have a problem with him retiring and unretiring.
What about you guys?
Well, yeah, maybe I kind of wish he had, because if you think Spirited Away, maybe after Spirited Away, like his first comeback. But
Spirited Away was pretty good.
Yeah,
it's just it was a little too preachy, in my opinion.
Yeah, kind of. After that, I guess the only one, well, Howl's Moving Castle and now Ponyo don't really live up to quite the high standards of, I mean, they look better, but they just don't feel quite right.
Especially since Howl's Moving Castle turns a story about a girl who really needs to learn self-esteem and makes it into war is bad! You think that's not a very good movie? Really? Really? Not as good as his other stuff? Really?
So I've got to ask you about this because it's been on my plate for a while to still see Howl's Moving Castle. And when it first came out, everyone was like, yeah, it's not as good as people say it is. But then when you go and look at, let's just say, film snobs, right? Online, there's a lot of people that review a lot of films, a lot of independent films. And they loved Howl's Moving Castle. And I was like, really? Because, like,
it's still a very good movie. It's just
disappointing for Miyazaki?
Well, yes. It's not only disappointing for Miyazaki, but it's also disappointing for, I don't want to get her name wrong, is it Diana Wynne Jones, the author of the original book? Yes. And you look at it and you go, this shares characters and this shares a premise, but it really goes way in another direction. Because, like, you know, one of the whole things about, if you read the young adult's book, Howl's Moving Castle, it's about Sophie learning that she doesn't, in fact, suck, and that as long as she has self-esteem, she can do anything. And so, you know, that's the message of it. As opposed to the Miyazaki version, where he really puts his own imprint on it, and I think it's not to the benefit of the movie. It's just to the detriment of the whole experience.
It has that guy from SMAP.
It has the guy from SMAP, or it has Christian Bale, depending on which version you listen to.
Oh, that's right. Christian Bale is in that.
Christian Bale and Billy Crystal.
Wow. Really?
Yeah, Billy Crystal plays the fireplace.
Well, I'm almost now. I'm just sort of like, I don't know if I should. Oh, fine. I have it there on the shelf.
Oh, what's his name? The guy who plays the prince.
Oh, something free. Crispin Freeman.
Yeah.
He has Crispin Freeman for about 5 seconds.
Mm-hmm. Ponyo's come out. Dom, you've seen it. Has anyone else at the table seen it, though?
No.
Okay, so I'm going to ask, before I talk to Dom about this, what are your expectations for Ponyo? If you ever, you know, somewhere down the line, you're going to see it somewhere, right? What are your expectations, though?
A pretty movie that has a bunch of Disney teen stars doing the voices, or their younger siblings.
Their younger siblings, actually, is the fourth Jonas brother, I think.
The fourth Jonas.
And Miley Cyrus's little sister.
And also Selena Gomez doing some of the other voices.
But it also has, like, Tina Fey doing stuff, right? Yeah. I think, hopefully, that Tina Fey plays the mom, because the mom is the best character in the whole thing.
If that's Lisa, then yeah, Tina Fey, Matt Damon, Liam Neeson, Kate Blanchett, Selena Gomez, Cloris Leachman, again, I believe she.
Wow.
Already, Betty White, Lily Tomlin, more Selena Gomez.
Betty White.
Yeah. So yeah, they have, and then, oh, Crispin Freeman again. Ooh, Mila Kunis.
Mila Kunis, nice. Anyway, so what are you expecting, Sung?
I don't know. I mean, I don't really expect anything from it. I don't really go into Miyazaki films expecting much. Like, I know that sounds kind of bad, but it's like I find them entertaining and I find them nice to watch, but I don't like get really excited about hearing about a Miyazaki film.
All right, and for me, based upon everything I've been hearing from Dom, I'm just gonna be like, I think it's just going to be pretty, and I'm probably gonna hate it. But maybe that, you know, huge amount of haterade will turn into a, hey, it was not so bad.
Yeah, maybe. Because the thing is that I went into it in Japan going, hey, I could buy beer in movie theaters. And it's like, oh, I went in there And I was like, okay, I can see where this movie... No, I can't see where this movie is going. Because, I mean, spoiler, she's a fish. And the reason that she starts becoming human is because she drinks blood from his hand when he gets a cut. And then she becomes obsessed with ham. And for some reason, she's in love with the boy who gave her ham. And so she steals magic and becomes a human. And she, to show that she loves him, she puts a tidal wave on his town. And then she used to be a fish. And he loves her too. And so he's going around telling people in this flooded area, hey, this is my friend. She used to be a fish. And then for some reason, they go to the old folks' home, which is the goal, and she becomes human forever. The end. And I went and I saw this movie like this.
You're just making it up along the way.
It sounds like that, but, you know, there's much more stuff in there. Like, his father's a fisherman, which is kind of touched on, and his mom is awesome. But, you know, you look at it and you try and describe the plot and how the flow of how it goes, and you go, I don't understand how this movie works. Because Goldfish falls in love with boy. Goldfish steals magic from her magician father undersea.
It's a good thing that he's a magician. Otherwise, how'd she find the magic?
Exactly. Boy.
Wait, is it a human magician or a magician fish?
He's a magician. You really shouldn't say it. That's dangerous territory there, Kevin. No, in theory.
I just got it.
All right, so anyway.
I'll have the chicken fishitis. Chicken fajitas.
The chicken fajitas and some quesadillas. But anyway, so the whole thing is that her father is like some sort of ex-human. They don't really go into it. He threw away all of his like
humanity
to live in the sea and steal magic from fish. I mean, the opening scene is really freaky because it's this guy in this white and blue striped suit with a magic wand pointing at things in the ocean and stealing some of their color. And he gathers it up and he puts it in
like
a bag.
Like Rainbow Bright.
Or Bright Light. Light Bright. What?
What?
Teddy Ruxpin.
What?
Let's keep going. But yeah, so it starts...
I don't know what Rainbow Bright is.
You don't know what Rainbow... Oh, okay, never mind.
Is it like Strawberry Shortcake?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
So anyway, so the whole thing is that, you know, that's how it starts. And then he's like running around with this fish...
Running around with the fish?
Because he discovers the fish that washes up on the shore because, like, Ponyo escapes from her father and wants to see something or whatever. It's, by the way, really freaky to look at because for some reason, goldfish with people faces is kind of weird. Like, not even Seaman weird, but weirder. But anyway, so he runs around with this fish for a while and, like, he beats up. Well, not he doesn't beat up, but he's this total jackass to people who ask him about his special fish. And then you're supposed to like this kid. And then he runs around with the fish. Then he loses the fish. Then the fish comes back with a tidal wave because she stole magic to become human. And then they're in love. And then for some reason, she can only stay human if he takes her on a rowboat to the old folks' home where his mother works. And for some reason, all of the old folks are safe in a bubble underneath the old folks' home. And you go, what?
This sounds like that thing in The Simpsons where
when Homer had the peyote?
No, the...
Homer, find your soulmate.
No.
Wait a minute. Dogs can't talk.
But get this.
Damn,
his best friend is a pie for some reason.
But yeah, so the thing is that it doesn't... The internal logic of the movie is non-existent. And after I got out of the movie, I actually messaged Eric, our friend in Japan, and I was like, was it just me, or did that movie make no sense? And he wrote me back, he's like, yeah, I saw the movie too. Makes no sense.
Wonderful. Well, I'm definitely looking forward to Ponyo just to see what's going to go on with there. But then let's talk about this then.
Would you like some of the more wonderful romantic dialogue?
Do not spoil this movie for me.
I want to go to Sasuke. I want to eat ham. Seriously, that's how she says that she loves him. I want to eat ham!
Is that what the English dub sounds like too?
No. I haven't heard the English dub. Well, actually, I have heard some of the English dub, but I haven't heard much of Ponyo because they only...
Did you know that Laputa means the whore?
Thanks, Kevin. I didn't know that, actually. Alright, I think it's enough about me ranting on Ponyo.
So, where's Studio Ghibli headed now? Because this is... this is kind of disappointing to hear from you, and Earthsea never made it over here.
Well,
thank God for that.
It hasn't made it yet. It was a dispute with the Sci-Fi Channel because they had the rights to Earthsea because they made their miniseries, which those rights actually will be expiring this year, so we... Well, it depends on how well Ponyo does, I guess, whether or not we see it.
Here's the thing, remember, Earthsea won the Japanese Raspberry Award for worst movie.
Maybe they could trick the American audiences in thinking it's an artful film. Or, get this, Disney, are you listening? Take Earthsea and then take the Jonas Brothers and have them dub all the characters in there. Have the Jonas Brothers write new songs, insert them into Earthsea, and you have your movie.
Yeah, just...
The Jonas Brothers.
A 90-minute long Jonas Brothers music video.
Animation, yeah, spectacular. The Japanese won't possibly think that's terrible, even though they don't like the film.
But the thing that's scary is, according to here to Wikipedia, it's not attributed, but Gorō Miyazaki is signed up to do another movie.
But I thought he didn't want to.
Well, here, you remember, people thought the same thing about Sofia Coppola for a while. And then she made Lost in Translation.
Yes, which, you know, hey, she won an Oscar for.
Well, no, the more surprising part was, hey, the person who made Godfather 3 terrible made a good movie.
But has she made anything good ever since?
Has she tried? Has she even done anything?
Hey, all I'm talking about is the redemptive power of keeping at it, all right?
The redemptive power, all right.
Of keeping at it.
Of keeping at it.
As long as you keep working, you can't suck forever.
Oh,
thanks, Kevin.
Marie Antoinette.
Stop that.
Marie Antoinette, which was
Marie Antoinette. Oh yeah, that movie was terrible.
It won an Oscar probably for costumes.
For costumes.
It won an Oscar for sound. Okay, so before the show, I asked you guys. Come here with your favorite Ghibli film. And really, I want to also ask you guys if you can even think about some other Ghibli films that you did really like before you name your actual one. So let's just do this. Let's go around and talk about... Well, actually, no. Just name a couple ones you like and then your favorite one.
All right. So Grave of the Fireflies has a great story around it because... Did you guys start this tradition for CAA where they would play Grave of the Fireflies every time finals time came around? Because Grave of the Fireflies, if you've never heard of it, is a very, very depressing post-war, and by post-war I mean post-bomb, movie. It is about the immediate aftermath of the atom bomb in Japan, and oh my god.
Yeah.
If you watch that movie and are unaffected by how sheerly Grave of the Fireflies it is, then you are not human. Because... That is a powerful movie, and it is hilarious to inflict on people who are stressed out.
Talking about it.
It's just so funny to try and inflict on people when they're already stressed out from preparing for finals.
Is that your favorite film?
No, it's not my favorite. Also, I have a special spot in my heart for the Kiki's Delivery Service dub because it has Phil Hartman. What?
Phil Hartman.
Phil Hartman.
He plays Gigi the cat.
I have a very different reason for liking that film, but I'll get into that later.
But yeah, my actual favorite is still Castle of Cagliostro.
All right. I couldn't tell from your talk about it earlier. No, I'm kidding. And your love of Lupin.
My love of Lupin.
So I like all of the early ones. Pretty much everything, all of the Miyazaki ones, I should say. Or even no. Let's see, I'm just looking at the list right now, and I'm like, Lupin liked it, Nausicaa liked it, Castle in the Sky liked it, Totoro liked it, going all the way down up into about Princess Mononoke, which is where it started getting a little preachy for me.
So what I'm about to say is nearly sacrilegious. I have never seen Totoro.
Neither has Sung.
Yep, neither have I.
And really?
That's one of the more missable ones.
Missing out much. It's enjoyable to watch, but you're not... It's not going to change how you think about life.
Yeah, I've also never seen Nausicaa.
Nausicaa is worth seeing.
No, it is not worth seeing. It is worth reading.
Oh,
it
yes.
It's not worth seeing.
Okay, here. Do you want to borrow the manga? I have the manga.
Yeah, sure.
So here's, and I know it sounded harsh. If you've read Nausicaa, never see the movie. Yes.
That's what I've heard from some people, actually.
That I would second that.
It is...
So, So I would say, since we're starting with Dom as a blank slate, have him watch it first.
Watch it first.
And then give him the manga.
And then just be like, wow, what were they trying to do with the movie? Because the manga is so...
It's so much deeper.
Good. It is incredibly good.
It explains why they're doing these things. Why the world is the way it is.
Yeah. To me, there's no movie.
But the thing is, I thought he wrote the manga after they did the movie.
I thought it was before. You know, with
three laptops, let's go to the internet.
With three laptops and two iPhones on the table, somehow I think this information will just appear.
Seeing as how it's a link right here off the page I am currently on.
1982 for the manga, 1984 for the movie.
Oh, okay. How about that?
All right, cool.
So, but I have to say my favorite is Kiki's Delivery Service.
All right, and because?
Because I love the city. The city is almost a character in itself. It is just so beautifully designed as a mixture of, like, San Francisco.
Like, a little bit of Amsterdam.
Yeah,
right?
Amsterdam, and then, like, there was some city in Italy that I think they said they based a lot of the designs off of, and just mashed them all together, but mostly the San Francisco influence that... It looks so cool. They made so much attention to the detail. And since a lot of flying is involved, they actually like designed the layout of the city from above that you can see. And since I'm like a big fan of maps of fictional places, that was really cool to me.
So you're describing it as the anti-Gotham, basically. Yeah. Like take everything about Gotham City and put it in reverse.
Isn't that
and
Metropolis?
You have Kiki's Delivery Service.
For me, my favorites have always been, I like Nausicaa because I haven't read the manga. Castle in the Sky. Castle
you can't even say La Puta anymore, can you?
Well,
I ruined it for you.
I'm specifically trying to avoid it.
I say Raptor. Raptor.
What does
it sounds like raptor.
I don't know. Maybe we should look it up.
It's Japanese for raptor.
The raptor. I got
it. Yeah, raptor. Yeah,
raptor.
Let me think.
Because raptors have wings and they fly up in the sky.
I found Porco Rosso entertaining.
Clever girl.
we're hijacking.
Yeah.
Sorry, son.
Yeah. I found Porco Rosso entertaining. It was interesting in there. I'm sure there's
the third part of Memories. Cannon fodder.
Cannon fodder.
Cannon fodder is actually really fun.
They only did the backgrounds,
but still, the backgrounds were pretty much a character.
I will say that one. Oh yeah, Grave of the Fireflies, but people have already missed that.
I also have to make sure people also mention the two that people forget about, which is Only Yesterday and Ocean Waves.
Right. And
I think people should mention Pompoko because that'll totally go over well in America. These raccoons with giant ball sacks going around and beating each other up.
I'm going to mention another one, and I'm pretty sure this one is also Ghibli. Romeo's Blue Skies, was that Ghibli?
I don't think so.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. It's the TV series.
Yeah.
Yes, it is Ghibli.
Is it?
Yeah.
It is. Same thing with like 3,000 Miles to Mother.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did a bunch of television series as well. Yes, Romeo's Blue Skies is.
Yeah, that series I liked, even though I never watched the whole thing. But it was, you know, it's a nice story about a couple of little kids who have to make their way in the world. But I have to say my favorite amongst them all is Kiki's. I think a lot of it has had to do with, at the time I first watched it, I was a really big Ranma ½ fan, and I was also big into voice actors. And they basically took a good half of the cast for Kiki's came from Ranma.
Wait, so according to this, I'm looking it up right now. Romeo's Blue Skies was actually done by Nippon Animation.
Are you sure? I'm pretty sure there's a Ghibli.
I think there's like Ghibli, a Ghibli link somewhere in there.
There's something that Ghibli did with it.
Anyways, yeah, that's not important. But yeah, it's for Kiki's. For me, it was very much just it's like I like their other stuff, like, but. For like Spirited Away and Santo Chihiro, it's all like kind of weird and really random. And for Kiki's, it was just her, you know, basically trying to find her place in the city. And it's very simple, very straightforward. She's a witch, but you know, like it's nothing like super mystical or spirits and weird things going on. And I like the simplicity of the story.
Yeah, it feels more grounded, even though there's a little bit of a whimsical element in there. Yeah. So I did check it. Romeo's Blue Skies, it's the character design is from based off of Miyazaki and Takahata's design when they were doing Heidi, Great
Okay.
of the Alps or something like that. Same thing with 3,000 Leagues in Search of Mother, not 3,000 Miles.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So it was the character designs, but the animation was someone else.
A lot of these Nippon Animation, they had World Masterpiece Theater, and that's
right.
Oh, yeah, that's a lot of what I was thinking too, yeah.
The character designs came from a lot of the Ghibli folks.
I see.
That's how.
That makes sense.
Okay, well, Andy, you mentioned the films that most people forget from Ghibli, and I was hoping no one would mention it so I could feel all cool for being the only one mentioning it. But, okay, Ocean Waves and Whispers of Heart are two of my favorites, and I'm usually a person that doesn't like the Ghibli films that have anything to do with fantasy. I like them to be straight-out, regular life stories and things like that. So the interesting thing was in college I made it a goal to watch every major Ghibli film. And the last one I had left was only yesterday. I had put that off for a while. And it surprised me because I didn't think I had any interest in it, but it actually ended up being my favorite because it's not about young people discovering things about themselves. It's about an older woman.
Discovering the
young person inside of her. And when I look back on it, I was like, this is Ghibli's version of Chick Lit. I think that's why I like it.
No, you didn't.
You did not do that to me, Kevin. You did not do that to me.
It actually is my favorite, though. I'm not just doing this to...
Yeah, I know.
...be like, did you realize... But no, it's my favorite, and I think it's such a different approach, and I'm kind of disappointed we'll never see a U.S. release about it because it's never going... Even on DVD, it won't sell here.
Which... Are you sure
it's the only... That and Ocean Waves are the only ones that, like, major ones that they're not even going to focus on.
Oh, because... Whisper of the Heart has...
Whisper of the Heart, I have it right there.
Yeah, well, I've got them all two at home, I just can't remember. Or My Neighbor the Yamadas.
No, that's released that here, too. I have that release as well. So it's,
Well, it's because it's been a while now because we didn't get Ursi, but like for that first couple of years, whenever a new movie came out, they would release like two or three of the old ones at the same time as a wave.
And I would love if Only Yesterday Ever Came over here. It is my favorite one.
The problem with that one is that more than any of the others, it is so culturally tied to Japanese culture. That it would be a lot harder to explain.
It's so based out in the countryside, and you have to understand the culture of what's... Even just to understand the story, you kind of have to know a little bit about Japanese culture. So I don't think we're ever going to see it over here, but it is my favorite Ghibli film, and it still probably will remain it for a long time, given the kind of output we've been seeing now. So that pretty much wraps up our episode on Studio Ghibli. Was there any other things you guys wanted to mention before we close out this one and you never get to talk about Ghibli ever again?
We have to mention The Cat Returns because I don't believe that one has come up at all in this conversation.
Nor has Porco Rosso.
We did mention
Porco
Rosso.
So now I think I'm looking at the list here. They've all been mentioned. Okay, we're done now.
My neighbor is the Yamadas.
United States, Canada, Mexico, Panama, Haiti, Jamaica, Peru.
That's actually one of my favorite ones too, because it's just
and
like
on your
a
mark.
Sitcom.
And on your mark.
Oh, and on
the
your
Chage,
mark.
The Chage and Asuka. Oh,
still one of the highest rated anime music videos on animemusicvideos.org.
Because it was actually made professionally.
It is one.
It fits the definition to a T.
It should still be the best one.
It better be the best one.
That music video is kind of screwed up.
It is.
Yes. With the whole angel getting chained up. And so I was like, what the hell?
And then don't the guys die at the end?
They
drive off. They rescue her and they drive off.
They shoot up all these guards.
Yeah. And they let her go. And they drive. What?
Like a kite.
Yeah, okay. And I thought their car went off something at the end.
No, they don't. It's okay. They drive down a steep hill.
No, that's Thelma and Louise.
Very good.
And our episode on Studio Ghibli ends on Thelma and Louise.
I'm scared.
I'm not going to hold you.
We're going to make it.
It's a ghost car.
What?
Sunshine, lollipops, and rainbows.
Kevin got it.
Oh, right.
Welcome to the jungle.
Oh, Simpsons.
What do you follow that up with? Good night, everyone.
No,
wait.
You can always email us about what talking about at feedback@s-words-podcast.com. Check out all of our older episodes at www.s-words-podcast.com. There's also some place some guy named Dom likes to empty his trousers. Where is that?
Well, other than your trousers, twitter.com/s_words.
All right. Very good. Anything else you guys want to say wrapping up this episode? It doesn't have to be Ghibli related.
This is my friend Kevin. He used to be a fish.
This is my friend Dom.
I used to be a fish.
I got nothing.
How do you follow that up?
I got nothing.
Yeah. Kevin wins again.
I'm a fish.
Kevin wins again.
Here, have a sandwich so you can make breast milk. That's a line in the movie, too.
I'll just say,
hey, did you hear that? That's the Andy face palm.
It's a line in the movie. Aren't you looking forward to it?
I'm just going to say this because it was missing from last week's podcast. Grr, arg.
Thank you, mutant enemy.
Wow, this episode gone way longer than I thought I was going to go with this stuff. I love how when the last few minutes are just crazy. Okay, I'm turning it off now.
You sure? Yeah, you didn't turn it off.
You're going to turn it off now, right?
Yeah, turn it off.
I dare you to turn it off. I bet you're too chicken to turn it off.
I'm just going
to
reach over there and
turn the
board off.
I bet you're a pussy. I bet you're too pussy to turn this off.
No, you hang up. No, you hang up.
I'm not hanging up till you hang up. We still don't believe you.
I don't think you've actually turned it off, Kevin.
It's still recording, isn't it?
Because you're too pussy to turn this off.
Turn it off.
I don't think you can pull that trigger.
Turn off the kit. Turn it off.
Your hand is shaking, man. I
don't
think
believe you.
You don't
make me come over there.
Click that button if you think you've got the guts.